All right, picture this. You're driving around your dream area and you see it, the perfect property. The view stops your heart. The trees are exactly what you imagined. The setting sun is hitting just right, and you're already picturing your dream home sitting there. So what do? You put in an offer that weekend. Maybe you don't even make a contingent on anything meaningful. You just buy it because you're afraid someone else will snatch it up. Fast forward 6 months, your architect looks at you with that uncomfortable expression and says, "Well, about that design you fell in love with, here's what can kill your dream. Utilities are a mile away and it costs $75,000 just to get power to the driveway. The septic system you need requires twice the space you thought. Environmental restrictions limit where you can build. Your dream property just became a nightmare." This happens every single day to good, intelligent people. And today I'm launching a new series to make sure it doesn't happen to you. Welcome to Understanding Design Limitations. Welcome to the Awakened Homeowner. Thinking about a new home or remodel, but feeling lost in a maze of decisions? You're in the right place. I'm William Reed, and for over three decades, I've coordinated the design and construction of hundreds of remodel and new home projects. I know the process can feel overwhelming, but trust me, you can do this. Here, we break it all down step by step so you can feel confident, empowered, and even excited about your project. No stress, no guesswork, just the guidance you need to bring your dream home to life. Let's dive in. All right, welcome back. Good to have you here. So today is special. We're launching an entire new series, and I've got to tell you, I think this might be one of the most important things I can teach you about home building and remodeling. It's called Understanding Design Limitations. Now, I know what you're thinking, Bill. This sounds boring. This sounds complicated. Do I really need to know about zoning and setbacks and all this stuff? And here's my answer. Only if you want to avoid redesigning your home after 6 months of work, only if you want to prevent wasting tens of thousands of dollars on plans that can't be built, only if you want to actually stay in control of your project from day one. Because here's the truth, and nobody tells you this up front, just because you own a piece of land doesn't mean you can build whatever you want. Even in rural counties, even on big parcels, even on Mars probably. Well, okay, maybe Mars is less regulated at this point, but you get my drift. There are rules, lots of rules. And these rules, these design limitations, they can make or break your project. I've been doing this for 35 years, and I've watched hundreds, I don't know, maybe even thousands of homeowners make the same preventable mistakes. They fall in love with a property without understanding what they can actually build on it. They hire an architect and get 6 months in design, only to discover zoning restrictions that kill their plans. They just assume that owning land means freedom to do whatever you want. And then the reality hits, and it hits hard. But here's the good news, and this is why I'm so passionate about this series. Once you understand these limitations, you can work with them. You can make informed decisions. You can avoid the costly mistakes. You stay in control. And that's what this whole series is about. That's what the Awakened Homeowner is all about. Enlighten, empower, and protect. Now, over the next several episodes, we're going to break down every major design limitation you need to understand. One topic per episode, so you're not overwhelmed. Clear, actionable information you can use immediately. And today, we're starting with the most critical piece, property evaluation, because this is the moment where the biggest mistakes get made. So let's dive in. Let me start by telling you why this whole series matters. All right, so before we get into the specifics of property evaluation, I want to frame this whole series for you when I say design limitations. I don't want you thinking this is negative. I don't want you thinking this is restrictive or discouraging, although it can be. I want you thinking strategic. Design limitations are the rules, local, state, sometimes federal, that govern what you can build, how big it can be, where it can sit on your property, and what it needs to look like. And yes, they apply to your property. Whether you're in downtown San Francisco or rural Montana, Whether you have a quarter-acre lot or 40 acres, whether you're in a strict HOA or just totally independent, there are rules. And here's what I've learned. The homeowners who understand these rules from day one, they're the ones with successful projects. The ones who don't, they're the ones calling me with horror stories. And let me tell you what happens when you don't understand design limitations up front. I call it the cost of ignorance. And first, there's the financial cost. Redesigns can run $10,000 to $50,000 or more. That's on top of all the money you've already spent on the first design. Then there's the permit resubmittals, additional consultant fees, all of that. And then there's the time cost. We're talking months of delays, expired permits, contractor scheduling nightmare, your builders moved on to another project because yours got delayed, and now you're waiting for them to free up again. But here's what nobody talks about: the emotional cost, the stress, the fighting with your spouse because the project's falling apart, the lost faith in your architect, your contractor, everybody. You start questioning if you made the right decisions to even do this project. And you know what? Sometimes there's relationship costs too. And I've seen homeowners blame their architect, fire their contractor, have family tension because Uncle Bob said he could have done it cheaper. So then there's the opportunity cost. While you're dealing with all this, you know, the market's changing, interest rates are moving, life events you're missing because you're stuck in redesign hell. I've seen this play out over and over. If you listen to the past episode, you've heard about Ben and Jane in the prologue of my book. And they fell in love with a lot, bought it based on the view and the setting. They didn't do their due diligence. They discovered restrictions way late in the game, had to completely redesign, finished 6 months late, 40% over budget, compromised on just about every finished decision. And compare that to the McMillans. They understood the limitations up front, involved professionals early. They've created a smooth process, finished within 2 weeks of the schedule. Their budget was about 10% over, and that was because they added back some options that they wanted earlier, and they put them back in, and what a night and day difference. So why these rules exist? Now, you might be thinking, you know, this is my property. Why should the government tell me what I can build? It's a fair question, but let me explain. These rules exist to protect property values, yours and your neighbors. They prevent your neighbor from building a big, bright pink mansion or setting up a junkyard, you know, next to your house and tanking your property. They maintain neighborhood character. They keep the communities cohesive. There's a reason certain areas look a certain way and people pay premium prices to live there. And then there's also infrastructure capacity, the utilities, the roads, the schools. They can only handle so much. The rules help manage that. And then there's safety, such as flood zones, fire zones, seismic zones. These aren't made up. They're based on real dangers. And then there's environmental protection, wetlands, watersheds, and protected species. Whether you agree with all of it or not, it's reality that we're working with. And then there's just the quality of life. And that's, you know, preventing overcrowding, parking issues, preserving green space and managing traffic, you know, and all of that. So these aren't arbitrary rules some bureaucrat just made up just to annoy you. They're protections. And honestly, they benefit you as much as they restrict you, because they also prevent your neighbor from doing something that destroys your property value. So we call this the awakened homeowner approach. So here's how we're going to approach this series. Knowledge equals power. Understanding limitations lets you work with them, not against them. Prevention over reaction, we'll call it. And, you know, learn before you commit, not after you're stuck behind the eight ball. So we're going to take one topic at a time, and each episode focuses on one limitation, you know, like digestible chunks. And so it's not overwhelming, and that we can create actionable information for you to be able to ask the specific questions to your design professionals or your building departments if you're doing a lot of it yourself, and the steps to take and the red flags to watch out for. And here's the thing, your architect, you know, should know all this stuff, but you need to know it too. Because you need to be able to verify, you need to stay in control. By the end of this series, you'll be able to have intelligent conversations with architects, planners, contractors. You'll ask the right questions. You'll spot when corners are being cut, and you'll stay in control of your project. And that's the whole point of the Awakened Homeowner: enlighten, empower, and protect. So that's why this matters. And let me give you the roadmap of what we're covering. All right, let me give you the lay of the land here. Over the next several episodes, actually, I think it's 11 episodes total, including today, we're going to be systematically covering every major design limitation that affects your project. I'm dedicating an entire episode to each topic because they're all important. And I don't want to overwhelm you by throwing everything at you at once. So here's what's coming. And don't worry about taking notes. I'll have all of this in the show notes and on the website. So just listen and get a sense of the scope. So here's a list of some of the episodes that we're going to be working on. So today's episode, episode 31, we're covering property evaluation. What to check before you buy land or start a design on property you already own. Episode 32, we're diving into city and county regulations. What are the municipal codes? Where do you find them? How do they govern your project? And episode 33 is all about planning departments. Who are they? What do they care about? How do you work with them effectively without getting shut down? And then episode 34, zoning districts. What the heck is an R1 district, for example? How do you read a zoning map? Why does lot size matter? And episode 35, zoning ordinances and what's called floor area ratio. This is a big one. How big can your home actually be? What counts towards your square footage limits? And then episode 36, height restrictions and lot coverage. How tall can you build? How much of your lot can you cover with structures? And then episode 37 is called impervious coverage and setbacks, water management requirements, how close to property lines can you build? And then episode 38, easements and two-story restrictions, who else has rights to your property? And what are the special rules for second stories? And then episode 39, we're covering parking and trees and special zones, required parking spaces, protected trees you can't remove, flood zones, fire zones, seismic zones, all the special designations. In episode 40, we're going to kick into historical properties and HOA. If you're in a historic district or a homeowners association, there's a whole other approval layer. And finally, episode 41, project classification and property taxes. When is a remodel considered new construction? And how does your project affect your property taxes? Now, here's the thing. All of these limitations are interconnected. Your floor area ratio affects your height restriction. Your setbacks affect your lot coverage. Your zoning district determines your parking requirements. It's like a puzzle where all the pieces have to fit together, and that's why your architect needs to understand all of this before they start design, because one overlooked limitation can domino through the entire project. But we're going to take it one piece at a time. By episode 41, you'll have a complete understanding of the entire landscape. And you'll know more than most homeowners, and honestly, probably more than some designers out there. So that's your roadmap. 11 episodes, each to focus on one critical topic, building your knowledge systematically. And every episode will have specific action items, questions to ask, things to verify, and red flags to watch for. Now let's get into today's main topic, property evaluation, because this is where it all begins. All right, here we go. This is the big one. Property evaluation is the most critical moment in your entire home building journey because everything, and I mean everything, flows from this decision. Whether you're buying raw land to build on, purchasing an existing home you plan to remodel and expand, or even if you already own your property and you're just now starting to think about building or remodeling, you need to evaluate what you're actually working with before you design anything. And here's what I've seen happen over and over. People fall in love. They make emotional decisions. They skip the due diligence, and then they're stuck. So let's make sure that doesn't happen to you. I'm going to walk you through exactly what you need to evaluate, who you need to involve, and what questions you need to ask. And let's start with why this goes wrong so often. And again, I'm going to go back to the emotional purchase trap. So let me tell you a story, and I bet some of you are living this story right now. You know, you're driving through your dream area. Maybe it's a mountain property with incredible views. Maybe it's a neighborhood lot with mature trees and that perfect street, and you see it. The property. Your heart races. You can already picture your dream home sitting there, the kids running around the yard, entertaining on that perfect patio spot you've already imagined. Your realtor's next to you saying, "This one's not going to last. There's another showing tomorrow. You should make an offer today." So what do most people do? They make an offer that weekend. Maybe they make it contingent on inspection, but they don't really know what to inspect for. They definitely don't make it contingent on a building feasibility assessment because they don't even know that's a thing. And 6 months later, they're sitting in my office or their architect's office and they're learning some really painful truths. Power is a mile away. It's going to cost $75,000 to $100,000 just to bring it in. That wasn't in the budget. Septic system they need requires more space than they have. They're going to need to carve out part of what they thought was going to be their orchard. There's a creek setback they didn't know about that limits building to 30% of the lot. The access road needs to be widened and improved to meet the fire department requirements. That's another $50,000. Slope requires massive retaining walls they never budgeted for. We're talking another $100,000 easy, and now they're stuck because they're emotionally attached. They've already told everyone they bought their dream property. They've started planning the house in their heads. They've posted pictures on Instagram with captions like, "Dreams coming true." This is Ben and Jane from my book. This is the beginning of a nightmare project. And it all started with an emotional purchase without proper due diligence. So let's talk about who to involve and when. So if emotion is the enemy, who do you turn to for objective evaluation? Here's something most home buyers don't know. Architects and contractors can and should be involved before you purchase a property, not after. Before. Now, you might be thinking, "Bill, that seems excessive. Can't I just look at the property myself? Can't my realtor tell me if it's buildable?" Here's the thing. Your realtor is great at real estate. They're not great at understanding building codes, zoning restrictions, site development challenges, utility connection costs, all the things that determine whether a property can actually support your vision. So here's what architects can evaluate for you. Building potential based on the size and the topography of the property. They can look at a slope lot and immediately know what kind of foundation you're going to need, what the grading costs are going to look like, zoning restrictions, and design limitations, especially if you engage with an architect that has designed and oversaw the construction of homes or remodels in your neighborhood or close to your neighborhood or within your city limits, because the architect has already gone through submittals to the planning department and building department for past projects. So when you start looking for architects, you're going to want to see if you can find one that's worked in, not necessarily, it doesn't have to be your neighborhood, but it has to be whatever building and planning department that is governing your neighborhood. That will really help you kind of streamline and expedite the discovery process as you're considering a property. So keep that in mind when you're looking for architects and matching that up with the property that you want. And they know how to read municipal codes. They know what's possible in different zoning districts. And that's going to be a whole episode tied to zoning districts. They're going to understand the access and the site development challenges. They can spot the stuff that's going to cost you money that you're not seeing. The feasibility of your design vision on that specific property. You can tell them, "I want a 4,000 square foot home with a detached accessory dwelling unit and a workshop," and they can tell you if that's even possible on that lot. Contractors can assess things like utility connection feasibility and cost. They know what it costs per foot to run power, water, sewer. They can give you real numbers. I think you'll find that a contractor has a little bit better finger on the pulse of construction than a design professional does, because the contractor is constantly dealing with cost for all aspects of a project. So be careful about leaning too much on the architect to provide you costs. They can be qualified, especially the ones that oversee construction called construction administration. If an architect is overseeing a project for a client, meaning during construction, after all the design work is done and the permits have provided, and then contractors, you're going to find are really, the good ones are pretty good at that. They understand, they can think about past projects that they've done, and they can provide really good input for you. So if you have a team of an architect and a contractor that can walk the site for you, and you should be willing to pay those people for that service because it can be extremely valuable. You pay somebody $5,000, it could save you $500,000 in some cases. You know, access challenges can concrete trucks get in there? Can material deliveries happen without a crane? What's the reality of construction access? Grading and earthwork requirements. They can walk the site and say, you're looking at 50,000 in grading, or this is pretty flat, you're in good shape. Realistic site development budgets. They've done this before. They know what things cost. Now, here's what this typically costs. You're looking at $1,000 to $3,000 for a pre-purchase property evaluation, maybe. That might include both an architect and a contractor, or just an architect if you're early in the process. And I know what you're thinking. That's a lot of money for property I haven't even bought yet. But let me tell you a story. I worked with a couple a few years ago. They were looking at three potential lots, all in the same general area, all about the same price, all looked beautiful. They hired an architect to evaluate all three before they made any offers. It cost them, I think it was $2,000. The architect came back and said, Lot A is perfect, good access, utilities are close, no major site work needed, build here. Lot B, possible, but you're going to need, about $80,000 in site development to make it work. And Lot C looks beautiful, but there are environmental restrictions that will severely limit what you can build. You might get a house, but it's not going to be the house that you want. They bought Lot A. That $2,000 consultation saved them from either buying the wrong property or making an uninformed $80,000 surprise. So that's kind of a story there. That's the best money they ever spent. So when should you do this? Ideally, before you make an offer. All right, quick reminder, everybody. Everything we're talking about today and so much more is in the Awaken Homeowner book. At less than 0.1% of your project cost, it's the best investment you'll make. Grab your copy on Amazon and keep it by your side throughout your entire project. Trust me, you'll refer to it again and again.
That's the gold standard.
You find properties you're interested in, you hire professionals to evaluate them, then you make informed decisions. So, a smart approach, you make your offer contingent on building feasibility assessment if you're concerned about either losing the opportunity to purchase the lot. So a lot of sellers will accept that if you explain it, properly. So a minimum, immediately after your offer is accepted, during your due diligence period, use that time to get professional evaluation. So you can elect not to make it contingent, but you still have a certain amount of time. It's not very long to do your due diligence with the property, and then you can always back out of the purchase of the property. Now, remember, this isn't just a blank lot. This could also be an existing home in a neighborhood that's going through a renaissance that you want to follow that path, and you want to, double the size of the home, or you want to demolish it or add on to it a little bit, whatever. This is definitely an opportunity to mess up. By buying that property, envisioning, a three-story home with a basement, and turns out you can't do it. So what should you never do? Close on the property without any evaluation. That's gambling with hundreds of thousands of dollars. So let's get into the hidden factors checklist. Okay, so whether you're hiring professionals to evaluate or you're doing preliminary research yourself, here's what you need to investigate. I call this the hidden factors checklist. These are the things that can make or break a property, and most people don't even think about them until it's too late. Factor number one, utilities. Now, this is primarily applying to new construction on a blank lot, and where is the power? How far away is it? What is it going to cost to connect? So it depends on the type of development you're looking at. If you are looking at a development, actual development, where a developer went in and built out lots and cut all the lots and put in the streets and put in the sewer and put in the water and the power and the communications, it's likely that there's power, water, communications to your lot. But you still want to double check that. If you are buying in an area that's not a development, maybe it's a larger parcel in a rural area or semi-rural area, you're going to want to understand where the power is, because if it's not near the property, that could be an extremely significant cost to bring it to the property. So power is like one of the first ones that you're going to want to think about. You love this lot, start looking around, and you may have to go into the utility district and find out what it's going to take to get power to your property. So water source is another one under the utilities category. And, you know, is it a municipal water system? Is there water brought to the property from the city or the county? Or sometimes it's called a community service district, and they provide water to the property, you pay for it. Or do you need a well? I mean, if you need a well, how deep? Is there water available on the property? What's that going to cost? Sometimes wells are shared systems with neighbors and can get complicated on the water rights. And you also have to pay attention to see if there is an existing well on the property and what the condition of the well is. So during your real estate transaction, you can ask for the disclosure package to include information about the well. It's not uncommon for, you know, properties with wells, for the wells to not be adequate, that require either drilling deeper or relocating, meaning drilling a new one. So keep in mind that your water source is really important. If, you know, somebody's, you know, asking X amount for a piece of property, but the well is inadequate, and it's going to cost you, you know, $50,000 to put a new well in, you're going to want to seriously think about how your negotiations and purchasing the lot. Knowing that ahead of time is the whole idea here, right? Sewer or septic under the utilities factor, you know, is the property on a septic system? Is anyone done what's called a percolation test? A percolation is how well the soil accepts the processed water within the septic system, because that's basically what a septic system does, is it returns the processed wastewater back into the ground. And if the system is not percolating well, then it's possible that you'll have to replace the leach field to the septic system or relocate it. So that it could be a significant cost, which ties into what is the soil like and how much space do you need for a leach field. And then also the reserve area for the leach field. So anytime you design a home that requires a septic system, which means there is no municipal sewer system, when you design a leach field that serves the septic system, you have to have an equal amount of space, meaning the double amount of the space for what they call a reserve field, which takes up space on your property, sometimes a lot of space in your property. So if you have a half acre lot and you have certain restrictions already built in, such as easements and creek setbacks and, you know, large front yard setbacks, it's very possible that you will already feel restricted when you think this is this big parcel. You're already feeling restricted. So keep in mind that the sewer and septic system is really important. Now, if it's a municipal system, meaning you just connect at the street, you're usually in a much better situation there, because it's at your property line. Usually what that is there's a main sewer line going down the center of your street, and there's what's called a lateral that comes out from the main and comes and stops at your property line, and your excavation contractor will connect to that when they install the sewer system in the home all the way out to the property line. So septic systems are a little tricky. They can blindside you based on the cost of installation and the amount of space it can take. Under utilities, gas is another one to think about. Is there natural gas available, or are we talking propane tanks, or are you going to even use a gas system? And again, we're going to get into these details about some of the requirements for the utilities in future episodes. So, you know, stay tuned for all of this. What about your communications, your internet? What type of internet is available? Is it a good fiber optic system, or is it an old legacy system that is going to just frustrate the hell out of you when you're trying to work out of your house? And it's, you know, that could be lower on the priority maybe, but if you're trying to work from home and you're in an area with no high-speed internet, that can be kind of a problem. These utility connections can cost anywhere from $20,000 to $150,000 or more, depending how far you need to go. And it all comes out of your construction budget. So let me give you a real example. I had clients a few years ago. They fell in love with a 5-acre parcel. Beautiful, secluded, private, everything they wanted. Power was 3/4 of a mile away. And they didn't know that. And the utility company quoted them $118,000 to bring it in. Their construction budget, $600,000 total. That 118 grand for power, that just evaporated 20% of their budget before they even poured a foundation. Now they know why they got such a great deal on the lot. So keep in mind that buying the lot, if you think you're getting a great deal, I think some people have this perception that, oh, I only had to pay $50,000 for my lot, so that must mean everything else is going to be cheaper. That's not the case. There's a reason for everything. And if that lot was $50,000, it's probably because everybody knew except you that it's going to cost another $100,000 just to get power to the property. So it's kind of a crazy story, but these are stories that you hear about all the time. All right, let's talk about factor number two. So factor number one was utilities. Factor number two is access. Is there legal access to the property? This sounds obvious, but I've seen properties that technically have legal access, but it's through a neighbor's easement, and that neighbor's not happy about it. What kind of road are we talking about? Paved, gravel, dirt? If there's a long driveway, what's it going to cost to build and maintain? Driveways can run anywhere from $5 a foot on the flat ground to $50 a foot or more on steep or rocky terrain. Can large trucks reach the building site? Because if they can't, you're looking at hand-carrying materials or craning everything in. That gets expensive really fast. And what about snow removal if you're in a mountain area? Fire access requirements. Some fire departments require roads to be a certain width, certain grade, certain turning radius. And let me tell you about fire access. So in many of the codes, in the fire codes, if you have like a long driveway going up to your property or down to your property, it's likely that it will require a turnaround at the base of your driveway near your home, and that can take up a tremendous amount of space on your property. They also require turnouts where, as you're approaching the driveway, vehicles will have to be able to pull over so that other vehicles like the fire engine and trucks can get by. Sometimes there's even a water requirement on site. So if your property is, I think it's in our state, if it's more than a mile away from a fire hydrant, it requires you to have a water source on site to fight fires on your property. And now think about that. What does that mean? That means you either are going to have to put in a swimming pool that they can pump out of, or you're going to have to set a large water tank on your property somewhere. These are all things that can affect the design and also affect the cost of your project. So keep that in mind. So is the access shared? Are there easement issues? All of this affects not just your construction costs, but your ongoing living costs, and it affects the design of your property. Easements can be a tricky one. And if you don't know what easements are, we're going to be talking about that. But easements are basically a part of your property that other people have rights to that you can't build on. So keep that in mind. It's one of the very first questions I ask when somebody says, oh, I love this lot, can you help me? And I say, are there any easements? That's the first thing I say. And there's almost always easements on property. Sometimes they're insignificant, but other times they can be really detrimental to a property, therefore affecting the cost and the value of the property, or at least they should. So factor number three, topography. So topography is a study of the slope of your property. So is the lot flat, sloped, or severely sloped? Flat lots are rare And they're valuable for a reason. They're easier to build on. Most lots, unless you're in some kind of suburban neighborhood, you know, where you're either redeveloping a lot or it's a new development, it's on a flat area that, you know, a developer is building out for people to do custom homes. But a lot of custom homes now are not in those kind of areas. They are in areas of some kind of sloping nature. So most lots have some slope, and you should be paying attention to that as you are evaluating your potential property or your existing property. And the first thing I think about is, where's the water going? Because water is the number one destroyer of buildings. No doubt about it. How it gets in, it's crazy how it gets in, and how is that going to be managed, and can it be managed on the property reasonably? So, you know, I look at the drainage patterns, because if water drains towards where you want to build, you're going to need to fix that. And drainage solutions can run $20,000, $50,000 or more. And I had a project where I was helping a client design a whole system or a whole estate, basically, for their property. And it was a sloping, it was a very complicated parcel with really steep slope on one side, a ravine in the middle. And during a significant rainstorm, I drove up there and stood there and videotaped or recorded what was happening on the property as the water was drainage, and I sent it to the civil engineer so they could understand what the water is really doing. And that, you can't get much more valuable information than that. So, and this is where I've already talked about a civil engineer and how much value they can provide. But as you're looking and considering lots, most homeowners don't know enough about civil engineering and slope and drainage and what it's going to take. It can involve installing retaining walls and significant drainage to route water away from your building site. You know, and what's the soil like? Is it rocky? Is it clay, sandy? This affects your foundation type and cost. And I've dove into that in the Design Professionals section series of my podcast here. And I talked about specifically about what soils engineers do. So you can go back and find that one and listen to what soils engineers are all about. You don't usually retain a soils engineer before you buy a property, but if it's a significant purchase, you may want to think about it. And then, you know, as you work through this, how does the view orientation line up with the sun orientation and access? Sometimes you've got great views to the north, but you need solar access from the south. And how do you solve that? Are there trees you want to preserve? Because removing large trees is expensive and it's emotional. I've seen homeowners in tears when they realize they had to remove a 100-year-old oak. So that is that whole aspect of factor number three, topography. And it gets a lot more involved than that. But I wanted to introduce that to you and start getting you to start thinking about those restrictions that may come into play on your project. Factor number four, easements. I just already mentioned them earlier. This one can sneak up on you really quick. And are there, you know, so you're going to be wanting to ask, are there recorded easements on the title? So when you buy your property, there are easements that are recorded on your property that will show on your title report. And that's one of the first things that you're going to want to look at. And even better if your seller has any documentation, such as a previous survey or any other information. That's one of the first things you want to ask. So you need to read your title report really carefully. And sometimes you may need a land surveyor to interpret the report, because a lot of it is verbiage. You don't usually see diagrams in a title report. So utility easements for underground power, water, sewer, these can run right through where you want to build. Access easements, where a neighbor has the right to cross your property to get to theirs. Drainage easements that you have to maintain. What can and can't be built in these easement areas? Usually nothing, or at least nothing permanent. Easements can dramatically reduce your buildable area, and they might not be visible on the surface as you're walking around your lot. You might walk a property and think you've got 2 acres to work with, and then you find out there's a 20-foot wide easement cutting through the middle of it. I had that happen with clients. They bought a 2.5-acre parcel. It looked perfect. They were going to build their dream home, have plenty of space. The survey came back showing a 20-foot wide underground power easement cutting through 1/3 of the property. Plus, the back third had a steep slopes that were basically unbuildable. So the net effect was we basically had 1 acre to work with. And actually, it ended up working out fine. It's just that if we had known that before they purchased the lot, it might have changed their buying decisions. But fortunately, we were able to design a home within those parameters, and it actually worked out just fine. But we didn't find out this information until after they purchased the lot. So in a perfect world, in hindsight, you know, everybody would have asked all the perfect questions and we would have known. But, and they still made it by the lot, and that's fine. But consulting with that architect ahead of time, or that contractor, or you yourself going into the planning department at your local building and planning department, you can just ask those basic questions. They can even tell you. So that is an example of what easements can do to a property. And there's a lot more to it, but that is one of the things you want to tick off your list is easements. And then factor number 5 is environmental restrictions. I know this can be a little touchy subject, but this can be a wide range of things. Is there a wetlands designation in any part of the property? Are there any protected species? You know, I'm talking endangered salamanders and nesting birds, whatever applies in your area. Is the property in a flood zone? You need to check FEMA maps. Now, let me tell you about this. So you could have a creek. It could even be a dry creek running along the back of your property or down the side of your property. And maybe it's only a 1/2-acre parcel. Well, there are setbacks required, number one, from an area, from creeks and riparian areas. And then this also, the flood zone likely applies to part or all of your parcel. And you have to be very careful here, because if you purchase an existing home on a lot that's in a flood zone, or maybe even partially in a flood zone, you will be extremely restricted on how you can add onto your property. So nowadays in a flood zone, you're required to elevate a home above a certain level above the flood zone. And if you have an existing home, it could drastically affect how realistically you can modify that structure. And of course, in new construction, it's a little bit easier if you're able to design your home on the part of the parcel that's not within the flood zone. So the flood zone thing is really, really important. Even if you don't think you're planning to build in the future, in the near future, you have to remember that you're inheriting this problem. And if you want to sell the property in the future, or you may want to remodel, maybe if there's the slightest chance you want to remodel that property, you may want to think about that before you buy it. Wildfire hazard zone. There's a new thing called, well, it's not new, but relatively new, called the Wildland Urban Interface. And there's all portions across the whole country. A lot of it's in the western states that are classified as WUI, Wildland Urban Interface. So if you're in a high fire zone, there are special requirements can add significant cost to the construction of your homes. You're going to want to understand if you're in a WUI zone, Wildland Urban Interface, and with consulting with an architect, they will tell you, you can build in it, but your insurance, you'll have to check to make sure that you'll be able to insure your property, and you'll have to check with an architect to understand what materials you'll be able to use on the exterior of the home, for example, and that can affect cost and aesthetics. So keep that in mind. Seismic zone considerations are also a really big one. Some areas require special engineering, and you have to be cognizant of this because there's research that you can do to understand if there's fault lines, for example, going through your property. I had one client that was just fell in love with a lot high above in this mountain community overlooking Silicon Valley, for example, in this case, and there was an existing home on it and they wanted to buy it and renovate it or move it or add another structure to it. And it turns out that there was a fault zone, and I think it was the Loma Prieta fault zone, that ran right through the property. And what would happen there is they would, if they didn't do any investigation, they would have bought the lot. Who knows? Maybe they had somebody design a home or a remodel and didn't do their due diligence. This happens. And then they went into the planning department to submit for their approval and got shot down and said, no, you can't build there. You're in a fault zone. You have to be, you know, 50 feet away from the fault zone. And even that, do you really want to be building that close to a fault zone? So the seismic zone research, now that's not, doesn't usually apply to the whole country, but it's more than you think. It's not just California falling into the ocean. Stream or creek setbacks. A lot of jurisdictions say you can't build within a certain distance of a waterway. And we talked about that a second ago, kind of in the flood zone category. But this is another one where environmental restrictions can be project killers. They may require special permits. They may require mitigation. Like if you disturb wetlands here, you have to create wetlands over there. It gets complicated and expensive. So some of these restrictions get discovered late in the process, and that's when they hurt the most. Factor number six, size and scale potential. What's the zoning district? What's the allowable square footage based on floor area ratio? And we're going to dive deep into that episode. I think it's episode 35 coming up. You need to at least check the basics before you buy to see if you're envisioning a large home on a parcel, you might be restricted and you didn't even know it. Can you build the size home you want on this lot? Is single story or two story allowed? Some neighborhoods restrict two story homes. What are the height restrictions? This is critical if you want a 4,000 square foot home and the lot only allows, you know, 2,500 square feet based on the FAR calculations, the floor area ratio. And we're going to talk about that in a whole nother episode. That could be a deal breaker for you. Factor number seven, budget implications. So here's the math you need to understand. Your total project budget equals land cost plus site development cost plus house construction cost plus a contingency. If the land and site development eat up too much, your house budget shrinks. So the rule of thumb that I like to use, the land, you know, plus the site work should be about 20 to 30% of your total budget maximum. Now, that's a very personalized aspect of building custom homes. Some people don't care. Some people have a very restricted amount of money. So you'll have to regulate that yourself. But just think about it. If you start taking a big bucket, big part of the bucket of money you have, just to throw it at the land before you even build anything, it's very likely you're not going to be able to have all the things that you wanted unless you're in a position, financial position, where none of that really matters. And this is why the due diligence before purchasing a property, if you're in that situation, is really, really important. Because you'll know going in if you're going to be able to allocate a reasonable percentage of your budget to the actual structures and not wasting it all on the site development. If you start approaching 40 or 50%, you're going to compromise on the house and you're going to have to cut things. You're not going to get what you want. So these site development constraints aren't always obvious. You walk a property, it looks great, and you start getting into the details and the costs start piling up. That's why professional property evaluation before purchase is so critical. It's really not optional, in my opinion. It's essential. So questions to ask before you buy. All right, let me give you the specific questions you should be asking, whether you're asking your realtor, asking the seller or asking the professionals you hire to evaluate. Question one, what's the zoning designation and what can be built here? And we'll talk about zoning in another episode. Question two, where are the utilities located and what could connections, the cost be? Question three, are there any recorded easements on the property? Question four, has a percolation test been done for the septic? What were the results in the case of if you have a property that's going to require or has a septic system? Question five, are there any environmental restrictions or protected zones? Question six, what's the soil type? Has there been any geotechnical work done? Question seven, are there tree protection ordinances that apply to this property? Question eight, what permits would be required to build here? Question nine, has anyone built successfully in this area recently? What challenges did they face? And question 10, can I make this offer contingent on building feasibility assessment? Now, here's the thing. Your realtor might not know the answers to all these questions, and that's okay. They're real estate experts, not building experts. But it means you need to find out. Don't assume. Don't trust. It should be fine, or I think it'll work. Verify everything. Get in writing, get documentation, do your due diligence. All right, so here's what we've covered in this deep dive on property evaluation. Emotional purchases are dangerous. You need professional evaluation before you commit. Don't let your heart make a $500,000 decision that your brain could be making or your brain should be making. Involve architects and contractors before you buy, not after. Spend the $2,000 or $3,000 on an evaluation. It's insurance, not an expense. And investigate the seven critical factors: utilities, access, topography, easements, environmental restrictions, size potential, and budget implications. And ask those 10 specific questions that uncover deal breakers early. This is your foundation. Get this right and everything else becomes possible. Get this wrong and you're fighting uphill from day one. Now, all of this, everything we just covered, is in my book, The Awakened Homeowner, section 2.301. If you want the complete details, including more examples, a downloadable checklist, real cost ranges, it's all in there. But for now, you have what you need to start asking the right questions. Whether you're property shopping right now or you already own your land, go through that hidden factors checklist. Verify everything. Don't assume. And in the next episode, we're going to talk about city and county regulations. What are municipal codes? Where do you find them? Why do thousands of projects get denied every year for preventable reasons? Today, we launched the Understanding Design Limitations series, 11 episodes total that will systematically teach you everything you need to know about the restrictions that affect your property and your project. We covered why this matters, because understanding limitations prevents costly mistakes and keeps you in control of your project. We gave you the roadmap of what's coming over the next 10 episodes, and we did a deep dive into property evaluation, the most critical first step. Before you fall in love with property, before you make emotional decisions, get professional evaluation. Check those seven factors. Ask those 10 questions, please. Verify everything. Everything we covered today and way more details in that Awakened Homeowner book. So if you want to read ahead or have it as a reference while you listen to this series, grab it on Amazon or any book platform, and just search The Awakened Homeowner. It's there. You can also head over to the website, awakenedhomeowner.com, and I have a blog that I'm working on there too. And if you want, you can also, in the previous episode, you can listen to that Awakened Homeowner story, Ben and Jane and the McMillans, or you could also download it. And, I want to hear your stories. Have you evaluated property and dodged a bullet? Or did you discover restrictions after you bought? What questions did I miss on the checklist and that you think should be there? You can drop comments on YouTube if you like, or send me a DM on Instagram at The Awakened Homeowner. Or you can even email me if you like at www.theawakenedhomeowner.com. And if today's episode helped you, if it gave you some aha moments, please share it with someone who's property shopping right now. Let's spread the love and the mission of The Awakened Homeowner. This could literally save them tens of thousands of dollars and months of headaches. So I want to thank you for joining my podcast episode today. I'm on a mission and I'm not going to let up. So I'm Bill Reed, your home building coach, and we will see you on the next one. Thanks for tuning into The Awakened Homeowner. Remember, you've got the power to take control of your project from day one. If you're ready to dive deeper, grab The Awakened Homeowner book on Amazon. It's your roadmap to success. Join our community at theawakenedhomeowner.com and download our free story, The Tale of Two Homeowners. And here's something exciting. I'm developing an app called BuildQuest that's going to revolutionize how you plan and manage your project. Visit buildquest.co to become a founding member and test drive the app when it launches. Follow us on social media and hit that subscribe button. All the links are in the show notes and bio. Got questions? I'd love to hear from you. This is Bill Reed. You got this.